Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, well.
Well, well, how are you?
We've caused some sort of debate.
We have.
We've stimulated debate on the important issues. Our aim.
We have. It's like we're Nick Ferrari or somebody.
Exactly.
The volume of response and the controversy one of our talking points has stirred up in our inbox. So we're going to structure the podcast structure in inverted commas slightly differently to usual. So we'll talk through some bits and pieces later. Also, because when you're listening to this, it'll be just after the Oscars. As we record it, it's just before the Oscars. I have a little quiz for you, Ed. It's not as good as last week's.
Right.
I didn't see your face light up when I said that. It was almost a grimace.
I felt like I should quit while I was ahead because I did quite well last week. It was my best ever score.
So we'll do all that later, yeah. But we're going to start by delving straight into the inbox. Do you want to say more about what it is that has caused such a storm in a teacup?
Well, yes. I mean, basically, voice notes. Who knew when there are so many big issues in the world that voice notes could really get people going? We both expressed our objections to voice notes. We thought we'd left them behind with answering machines having become obsolete. So here we go. Yes.
Yes. That's
do you want to start?
Yeah, let's jump in with this from Steve Badham on texting versus voice notes. He says, in my work, WhatsApps, I think some people prefer to send voice messages because it's quicker than typing and can be done once you carry on with other things.
Yep.
Plus, some folks are less comfortable using the written word because of issues like dyslexia. Now, Steve, I think that is a really good point.
Yes, it is.
But there's also a thing about the way people process information, people with other neurodifferences, and some people do really poorly processing things in an audio file.
So that's interesting. Yes. This is Rebecca Lester. Hi, Milliod. Interesting. Jeff Edoff.
Like Benifer.
Or Jedward. Jedward.
Yes.
I've often thought about emailing generally more serious thoughts. Who says that voice notes aren't serious? But the voice note chat really got me. A voice note is only acceptable if the tone is essential to the message. For example, I send these often, doing terrible impressions and quotes that fit the conversation. They're also acceptable for singing. However, a voice note should not be used for a general chatteroo, because if I'm out and about, I don't want everyone around me knowing my conversation. There's no preview, no way to test if it's suitable for general public consumption. Not sure if I come under the youth bracket at 32. Hoping so, my ever-increasing grey hair may sit different. Definitely. 32 is youth.
Yes, you're in the youth wing there.
Yeah, the youth wing.
Weirdly for you, you didn't read out the compliment at the end.
I noticed that. Yeah, interesting. P.S. Ed absolutely loved your book. Okay, I will. Okay.
Well, what I liked about that one is... Because with any of these things, we just need rules, right?
Rules of the road, I agree.
Rules of the road. And
yeah.
A voice note is only acceptable if the tone is essential to the message.
The tone, though, what does it...
The tone could get lost just in text form, even if you are using a lot of emoji.
What is a tone that you might be using that would work for a voice note?
Well,
I mean, clearly it's really not an apology, is it? Oh, Jeff, I'm so sorry I didn't get back to you about the blah, 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 because that's like, and the bastard left me a voice note. You know what I mean?
I think it depends what the apology is. If it said, I didn't get back to you about the blah, 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 I think that probably is okay for a voice note, unless the blah, blah, blah is, for example, a wedding invitation.
No. I think you can't do that. Okay, so what's the tone? Ha-ha-ha tone?
Yeah, I think one of the emails that's coming up gets into this, but sometimes if you want to tell somebody a funny story, all the life can get sucked out of it if you put it into a text message.
Interesting.
Mm. But as we've discussed before, your use of the word fine, if you were sending fine as a voice note and it was a cheerful fine, then it wouldn't come across quite so much like fine.
I think there's something I don't like about it, which is it's one thing to send a message to somebody. I think it's like a sort of monologue conversation. That's what I'd find, I think, is slightly difficult about it.
Yes. I remember reading, I think, like one of Adrian Childs's columns, actually, and he had a statistic in it, which is after 90 seconds of monologue, the brain finds it hard to stay focused. In other words, we're more wired for the back and forth of conversation or the flow of a conversation. Yeah. And one voice speaking can be hard to stay focused on.
Yeah, I think that might be right. I sort of think that might be right. Should we keep going?
Yes, this comes from Victoria Hills Fletcher, who says, I love a voice note. I am a millennial and have lived through voicemails, texts, voice notes. I got my first phone around 2005, 2006. Oh, that's interesting. When did you get your first mobile phone?
It must have been a bit earlier.
Were you issued with it by Gordon Brown so he could be in touch with you at all times?
Yeah, probably. No, you started with pagers. I think it must have been around the turn of the millennium. Maybe before, actually.
Mm.
Maybe by 97 I had one, probably.
I had one in about 1990, very briefly. A friend got rid of his. Wow. He got a new one. And I had one of those which was on a strap over the shoulder.
Did you need an extra room in your house?
It was like that. I mean, I think probably I still walk slightly oddly to this day. You know, like, it was so heavy. It was on a strap. It looked like something you might take into. It looked military, almost. Right. And nobody would ever ring me on it because it was too expensive. So I got rid of it, and then I didn't have one like you until around the turn of the millennium.
Yeah.
Anyway, Victoria continues, I used to find leaving voicemails very stressful. You can't delete them, so if you accidentally say the wrong thing, or you're weird or awkward, your friend's parents or your friend would hear you being weird, and then you'd have to think, oh great, they're all going to hear that now that I've lost the plot. There was a weird pressure knowing that what you were saying could be listened to by someone other than who you meant it for on house phones. Yes, that's right. She says, voice notes are great, and for me, are saved for the people I'm closest to. I don't voice note just anyone. I voice note someone who I know will appreciate a good story or a funny event. I love getting them from my friends too, as things just don't come across the same way in writing. If someone sends you a long message saying, listen, I've been on a hilarious date, etc., it's nowhere near as funny or as interesting as having them explain it to you
over
a voice note. The risk of voice notes is that sometimes you can press the button by accident. My mum does this and sends someone a voice note of you on the loo or ordering a coffee, etc., without realising. Sort of like a pocket call, which could be embarrassing. I think there's some good points in there. I do think, though, better still is telling somebody that story in a conversation.
Yes, I think that must be right.
Picking up the phone and calling someone and telling them.
I mean, that must be right, surely.
Yeah.
Well, maybe there's some reason why you can't do that.
Unless you're sending it to multiple people, but then you're getting a bit like these people who send you a bulletin about everything that's happened to them that year in their Christmas card.
Yeah, I'm not so into that.
No.
Okay, the next one comes from Leon Nguyen. I hope I've got the pronunciation right. Hi, Ed and Jeff. I had my mind changed about voice notes, so I had to write to you. I still think they have their time and place and can be inappropriate, but they are very useful in certain situations, like when your hands are busy driving with a baby or making tea, food, but you're still trying to communicate with people, which requires more than a passing comment. The biggest benefit, however, is the ability to convey emotion and feel a lot closer to the sender. No typed message could have explained to me what my friend was going through at 5 a.m. in Kyiv on 24th of February 2022, but her voice note, which cut off after a few seconds when she broke in tears, said more than hundreds of news reports I read that day while living in London. Now I'm living in Kyiv, and I've noticed the cultural difference too. People here use them a lot more, as well as video messages. I don't know why it is so. Maybe because you don't want to have your hands out for too long in the cold winter. but the culture of phone calling generally is a lot stronger here overall, but said in text-based.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, love the pod.
Those things are interesting, aren't they? So, firstly, video messages. Isn't it interesting that we're happy to send people voice notes, but we don't send them little videos? I don't know if that's about the cost of sending that much data, like a video file versus an audio file. But I think,
well, no, but you can send them on the WhatsApp.
I think I'd rather get a video from somebody than a voice note, because you could still use it. If you're busy doing something else, you can still just listen to the audio.
You see, I think the voice note is more like conducting your business. Whereas a video is more like...
happy birthday.
Well, like, I'll send a video to my aunt in New York, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If for some reason I can't speak to her.
Yeah. And the cultural thing as well. I love hearing about how these technologies are used slightly differently in different countries. So, for example, in India, WhatsApp is huge, but the group, it's used almost like a Facebook or something. So you get these vast WhatsApp groups with hundreds of people in them, and lots of memes and jokes and updates and these online conversations going on. It's used in a completely different way, a friend of mine in India was telling me. Okay, this is from Katie Reed, who says, "Hi, Ed and Jeff. There are two reasons why I love voice notes. Number one, when I hear the voices of my friends, I can know whether they are really okay. They might not want to tell me outright, but a sigh or a tightness of the voice is telling. Do you know, my mum was always one for that.
Really?
Yeah. Because, you know, like, you ring your parents and you never really want to tell them what's going on. And she could always just tell from my voice. It was a real thing with her. Number two, we are in the grip of a loneliness epidemic. And when I hear my friends' voices, it makes me happy. I hope my voice makes them feel happy too."
The last written one is from Sarah Kaushik. "Hi, Ed and Jeff. I was once in a taxi in Colombia. The taxi driver had his phone mounted on his sun visor. He was having a full-blown conversation through WhatsApp voice notes. He'd send a voice note and immediately receive a voice note reply. Then he'd send a voice note back. I asked him why he was doing that rather than just having a phone call. And he told me that Facebook, WhatsApp and Instagram were free for the user. So it was cheaper to talk this way rather than use the credit for a phone call."
Aha. And then finally, Ed said that was the last written one. This comes from Chris Knott, who says, "Hi, Jed and Oof. voice notes, please hear attached my thoughts." And he has sent us a voice note, so let's have a listen to it.
"Hi, Ed and Jeff. It's Chris here. I felt like I had to write in after your voice note pod discussion last week. In terms of age brackets, I'm holding on to my 20s. Not sure what gen that puts me into, but a fair bit younger than you, Jeff. I have to say, I had some serious issue with the points that were made. So Jeff started talking about iMessage voice notes and how they disappear. I have to say, nobody uses iMessage anymore. I fear that this is a bit of a malign influence from your American wife. Maybe malign is a bit strong. Anyway, then Ed started talking about how a written format is much easier to process than some kind of extended verbalized explanation, which is not great if you are trying to conquer the podosphere, as you two are. Or maybe you feel that you have already done that and therefore you can get away with it. Anyway, trying to save you, I thought maybe he's taking issue with the verbalized thoughts, which are meandering and don't have a clear focus. Maybe there is something in that. Unfortunately, upon looking down at my screen and seeing the word chatteroo, I concluded that neither of you have got a leg to stand on. For what it's worth, I quite like a voice note. I think it feels personal, and I guess meaning as well as humour can be better expressed with the aid of our vocal cords. However, 2 minutes should be the absolute maximum. On that, I should probably end. And yes, Jeff, I did use notes for this. Anyway, happy podding."
Can I just say, he's got a very good voice. He's got a Runciman-esque voice.
Yes, I know. I would, I'm not sure I'd pay Chris, but I would like it if I found a YouTube video of Chris doing a sleep meditation.
Yes, I thought he was charismatic.
I could feel
voice.
My blood pressure dropping listening to him. Actually, this, I don't know if it proves my point, but to my point, there was something Chris said at the beginning of his message that I'm trying to remember what it was now. because I wanted to read. Oh, iMessage. Was it you, Ed, who sent me a Guardian article saying that not millennials, but Gen Z? Hang on. Which are the youngest ones?
It's Gen Z, isn't it? That. Yeah. I'm glad you've forgotten too. Yeah. I've forgotten.
They are, they're turning away from WhatsApp and back to texts and iMessage.
I don't think it was me that sent that to you.
Oh, well, somebody did. So I just wanted to refute
one of your
point.
Other podcast co-hosts. Maybe. Anyway, it's who knew. we really now I feel like we should sort of in the same vein just talk briefly about Nell Frizzell.
Oh yes, you sent me this.
Nell Frizzell, who we had on the podcast, and basically she's written an article in The Guardian. How long should it take to answer a WhatsApp? About a fortnight. Real friends don't expect instant feedback. They know you're busy slicing potatoes or loading the washing machine. Now, so she basically says, a few things bring me greater joy than someone taking 2 weeks to reply to a WhatsApp message. I mean it. This week, my friend and former teacher replied to a message I sent asking after his knee with a very friendly and funny message. You see, that was done not as a voice note. It had taken him a mere 24 days to respond. Glorious. Not only does that kind of slack immediately take any pressure off me to reply there and then while trying to simultaneously slice a potato, open a box of magnets for my son, load the washing machine and turn down the radio, but it proves the two of us have enough mutual affection and respect that at some point we can just pick up where we left off. Haven't replied to him yet, of course not. I've had cables to untangle and rice to boil. What do you think then about this?
Well, I am a slow...
A delayed response. Oh, this is the thing. A delayed response isn't a slight against you. It is a license to take your own time to reply. It is a permission to come back only when you want.
Well, as I so often am when I hear when I read something that Nell has written, I am in agreement.
Well, then you're not in agreement because you constantly have a go at me when I don't reply to you within 24 hours.
No, don't reply at all.
Don't reply.
So I sent you a message, I don't know, 4 days ago.
About a pizza place.
Yeah, it was close to where you lived, and I noticed that a good pizza place was opening. And I thought, oh, I'll let Ed know. Maybe the boys will enjoy that. And it's not that you took 36 or 72 hours to reply. It's you didn't reply at all. You didn't even do the little thumbs up.
There's been no reply at all, but it's 3 days.
Okay. Well, tell you what, should we revisit this in 24 days and see if I've had a reply?
Yes, fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
It's really good pizza. But anyway, it was a pleasure going through the inbox this week. Very strong opinions, as you heard.
And keep them coming.
Yeah, and also I just wanted to make the point that I have held over a few emails. I thought we'd go all voice notes this week. So if you emailed us about something else, we will try and get to those in the coming weeks. But we would love to hear from you, please. The email address is chat@cheerfulpodcast.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, taking a real swerve, you've sent me this article about an interview with John Kerry, interview in the New York Times, on bowing out as the United States' top climate diplomat.
Yeah, it was an interesting article, actually, because the headline was John Kerry, I feel deeply frustrated. And reading the interview, you can see why, as is so often the case with the climate crisis. But there were some facts within it that I thought were really kind of encouraging, and I wanted to ask you about them. The first one, he says, and China is now manufacturing and producing and deploying more renewables than the rest of the world put together. And I think it's because they know they have this huge, huge cloud hanging over them in terms of their coal dependency. And then the journalist says it's sort of two stories at once. China, the green behemoth, yeah, racing faster, yeah, than anyone else. And China, the coal behemoth, doing more damage, yeah, than everyone else. And John Kerry says it's correct for now. But I knew that there was stuff going on. We've talked about it when we've talked about the COPs. But I don't think I quite understood that it was more than the rest of the world put together.
I mean, the numbers are absolutely, I'm just looking them up, but the numbers are quite extraordinary. So China installed more solar panels in 2023 than any other nation has built in total. I mean, you could keep the numbers coming. The facts coming. This is, if you like, a microcosm of the wider truth about the climate crisis and action, which is the world is doing more than it has ever done before by a long, long way, and it's also very inadequate.
Mm.
You know, that both of those things can be true at the same time. But I've always thought, and this goes back to Kingsmill Bond and who we had on the podcast, that the reason China's doing this is, okay, because they know the climate crisis is the threat, but also the economics has moved so dramatically.
Mm.
You know, it just is so much more economically sensible to install new solar and so on than new fossil fuels. So, you know, it's just the economics has moved in such a direction. So, yes.
And then the other thing was, he's talking about in the last year, he says you had $1.8 yes. trillion dollars of investment in new yes. technologies, clean energy, green energy, and you had $1.1 trillion that's in good. The old energy.
That's good. That's good.
He says, but still, that's the first time historically that renewables and clean energy have beaten the amount of money that's going into investment in fossil fuels. So I think we're in the revolution. So that $1.1 trillion in old energy feels a bit depressing, but we're past the point of crossfade.
I mean, it's interesting you should say this, because obviously I'm thinking about what happens. I'm engaged in preparations for government if Labour wins the election, and what you're saying and what you're conveying reflects a sense of how daunting the challenge is, but also a sense of excitement
mm.
about what can be achieved. I mean, there is, you know, we have these energy sources, these natural, I mean, I know it sounds like a sort of obvious and simplistic point, but we just have these natural energy sources, and we just need the kit that can take advantage of those energy sources. I was in Grimsby this week, you know, and off the coast, there's all kinds of offshore wind being built. And it's just, the potential is just absolutely huge. And we have the technology to do it. You know, and yes, there are new technologies that we're also developing. But, you know, and it's true of solar as well. It's such a basic point. But yet, it's profound, I think.
Yeah. Well, I thought that those were a couple of cheerful stats that were worth sharing.
Definitely. And we'll share the thing in the show notes, yeah?
Yeah. And if you're listening to this and you have some if you have some encouraging and surprising facts or statistics, Ed over there, you're like Stato, aren't you? You love a fact and you love a statistic.
I know, nerdery.
Yeah. chat@cheerfulpodcast.com.
Now, should we talk about big pants or bagels?
what are you feeling? What are you feeling more like this morning, big pants or bagels?
Should we do some big pants?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I mean, this is going to lead to a whole... I mean, I think our diverse listenership can really help us here.
Yes.
So this is an article in the New York Times entitled Why Are Pants So Big Again? Pants being trousers for our purposes. It's by Jonah Wiener. Now, I mean, I won't try and summarise this article, or I will try and summarise it, but the basic point is basically big pants are back in, apparently.
Aha.
That's the basic long and the short of it. And the era of what I might call drain pipes or
skinny jeans
is out. And I think I hesitate to even talk about my sort of fashion situation.
I think if he is a man who likes himself some slacks, I think built for comfort rather than speed, is that fair to say when it comes to trousers?
Except when I look at these pictures in this article, I think there's some quite a lot of what I would call flares going on, or bell bottoms, as they would have been known.
So when I was at school, I wonder if this was the same for you, so in the 80s, the worst thing, the thing that would get you bullied, was if the trousers in your school uniform were too wide. If there was any suspicion that they might be flares, you would be set upon. It'd be worse than having the wrong bit of your tie sticking out.
Yeah, I sort of, flares were really sort of not sort of a problem.
But then,
and this author says, I'd been feeling the rumblings of a return to big pants since about 2017, when I remember worrying about the fact that I was 36 and still wearing essentially the same pants I'd worn at 26. But apparently this rumbling has sort of really kind of got going.
What years were you at university?
1989 to 92.
Because flares did make a comeback during that exact period. Flared jeans, when all the Hacienda, Happy Mondays, Manchester stuff was going on. People were wearing huge flared jeans.
I know, but I just obviously missed me out. And I can't blame Gordon Brown. In February 2021, the fashion critic Rachel Tazjam tweeted a photo from the Oscars of the Danish film editor Mikkel E.G. Nielsen in trousers whose tent-like expanse could have accommodated two of him. Quote, folks, this is pants history unfolding before our eyes, she declared. After years of tiny, tight, overly tailored pants, big trousers return to the red carpet. At subsequent award shows, Lakeith Stanfield, Paul Mescal and Eddie Redmayne were among those to follow Nielsen's extravagantly swirled footsteps. There's a Harry Styles picture from 2023. I'm not comparing myself to Harry Styles. But I love this phrase, by the way, which is totally the opposite to me. Mm. It was a 2021 tweet from the comedian Noah Garfinkel, who distilled the spiralling epistemological vertigo around pants into an absurdist fashion cone. Whatever style pants look like to you are the pants you're supposed to wear, he wrote. And as soon as they start to look normal to you, those are not the right pants anymore. You should always be wearing pants you think look stupid. And Larry David apparently once said that trying on pants is one of the most humiliating things a man can suffer.
Yes.
But I mean, doesn't this open up a whole vista, which is, what is the age that people like us should stop wearing jeans? Is there any age? I think there probably isn't any age anymore.
I'm not sure. I did think like that. Then I saw somebody, I can't remember who it was, somebody I like on one of the American talk shows saying, no, absolutely, if you're over the age of 40, you shouldn't be wearing jeans. And then I felt a bit shamed. And apart from one pair of black jeans, which have a trouser-like quality, I've completely cut jeans from my wardrobe. Although yesterday, coincidentally, I found a pair that had gone at the crotch. And this particular brand do a lifetime guarantee, so I took them in to be fixed. So maybe I'll reintroduce them. But you still wear jeans with some regularity.
But, I mean, what is that really a thing? I mean, I sort of raise it because it obviously is a thing.
What, the giving up on jeans? I mean, does it matter what you look like to a young person? Because you're always going to look like an old fart to a young person anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I do sort of buy into this idea at different stages of your life. You have to think, well, that's that chapter done now. Let me see what I can make of it.
My wife does sometimes say when I try things on, sorry, that's for somebody in their 20s.
What are you trying on?
I don't know.
How skinny of leg do you go? Because you've got quite skinny legs.
I think I have a kind of, I think you've put your finger on it characteristically, which is I have a sort of deep phobia about anything flared. The skinnier it is, it can be as skinny as you like, but flared is like, because of my childhood experience.
Yes, yes.
Bell bottoms. It was sort of, it was post-70s, and so it was absolutely no way should you be wearing anything flared.
Mm. But my problem with too skinny a trouser leg is if I've got stuff in my pockets, it then looks like I'm wearing jodhpurs or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, well, do you think I think we should seek some listener advice for us.
Yes.
We want some fashion advice for us, which is, you know, jeans, not jeans, ? Flared, not flared. What can we sort of carry off?
What can we get away with? And what is dignified? And if this voice note, if the email received from the voice note has told us anything, it's told us that we have plenty. In fact, I would say the majority of the email we received came from people in their 20s. So we are here to learn. This is a teachable moment for you.
We do need to be taught. I mean, I'm now very partial to the shacket. Oh, also, corduroys. What's the corduroy situation these days?
Oh, I mean, I would go all corduroy all the time, given that I love corduroy.
You look good in a corduroy, though.
Yeah, I've got a geography teacher quality to me.
No, I think that's... Yeah, well, yes, but geography teachers are great. But I think you look good in a corduroy.
Yeah, I love a corduroy. I really
do. But maybe it's because you're an autumn.
But I just wanted to say, you know how the Office of National Statistics do that basket of goods? And if there are changes in, you know, they measure, you know, different metrics, how the economy's doing, how much money people have, but by the prices of those things. I wonder if there's a similar thing we could do with things that change size. Do you see, like, so width of trousers would be one of them, but if you wanted to go for the, you know, the hacky cliche, the size of a wagon wheel or a curly whirly could be another.
Well, is it an inflationary thing you're talking
about? I don't know.
About?
I mean, this is the
Well, I think Joe Biden, is it the thing in America about shrinkflation, things becoming smaller?
I don't know.
Have you not heard about shrinkflation?
No, I've heard about stagflation, inflation, outflation.
No, it's shrinkflation. It's something to do with the goods becoming smaller.
Hmm.
Shrinkflation, reduction of the size or weight of retail products. Shrinkflation explained. Cook, because he was pushed back on shrinkflation. What is shrinkflation? Biden calls out shrinkflation. Oh, White House, here we go. I know you think I've made this up, but let me just read to you from the State of the Union. Too many corporations raise prices to pad their profits, charging more and more for less and less. That's why we're cracking down on corporations that engage in price gouging and deceptive pricing, from food to healthcare to housing. In fact, the snack companies think you won't notice if they change the size of the bag and put up a hell of a lot fewer, same size bag, but fewer chips in it. I'm not joking, it's called shrinkflation. Pass Bobby Casey's bill and stop this, I really mean it. You probably all saw that commercial on Snickers bars and you get charged the same amount, you got about, I don't know, 10% fewer Snickers in it. So there you go.
Well,
shrinkflation is a thing.
Well, that's...
Anyway, but have I missed the point that you're making about trousers? I feel like we've got a long way from trousers.
Here's what I think. I think we can do some kind of chatteroo shrinkflation chart, you could call it. Things which are either getting smaller, getting larger,
but this is
longer.
Not shrinkflation. This is the opposite.
Oh, let's just bundle it all into one thing.
But it's not an inflation thing, is it? It's just you've got wider trousers.
I don't think so. I don't think jeans got skinnier because the jeans companies thought, hang on, we could use less material and make the same amount of money. But... I just thought that might be interesting to make some kind of list of things which are changing shape or size.
Oh, I get. I think I right. I sort
and
of
see if there's anything to be extrapolated
did
from
I
it.
Did I sort of rather misunderstand your point, I fear?
No, what you did is you made it far less inane than it was by bringing up the State of the Union address. So I only thank you for it. But any examples of that, please, chat@cheerfulpodcast.com. Are you ready for a quiz to finish?
Oh, yes, the quiz to finish. I like it. I like a good quiz.
So the Oscars and, tonight?
I like a good quiz, but I'll have to take yours instead.
Oscars tonight, are you staying up and watching it?
Nope.
People will know the results by the time they hear this. So I have an Oscars quiz.
Yes.
This quiz is called Oscar the Gong or Oscar the Grouch.
Right.
Got to give you facts. You have to tell me whether they're about the Oscars or the character Oscar the Grouch from Sesame Street.
Right, okay, I'm not a watcher of Sesame Street, but I'll do my best.
You can bring Oscar to mind, can you?
No.
Lives in a bin?
No.
Okay. Originated in 1933.
Sesame Street.
Yeah, Oscar the Grouch, Carol Spinney, who performed Oscar, was born in 1933. The Oscars were 1929. Yeah. Sometimes found in a trash can.
The Oscars.
Yes, because even though Oscar is usually, not sometimes, found in a trash can, there have been a number of occasions in the past where either lost or stolen statuettes from the Oscars have been found in bins.
Yep. How many are there in this quiz?
Too many. Snubbed the colour purple.
The Oscars.
It's actually Oscar the Grouch. Jim Henson's original designs for Oscar were purple and not green. The colour purple didn't win any Oscars, but it did receive 11 nominations, so that's not a snub.
Well, sorry, that is
it's not a snub.
Both are correct.
It got the nominations.
No, both it's snubbed. Both are correct.
Changed locations for the first time in history in 2016.
Oscar the Grouch.
Yes, they moved his trash can from outside the steps of number 123 Sesame Street to a recycling area. Okay. The Oscars have been at 9 different venues, by the way. Oh, here we go. Saw Peter Ustinov forcibly ejected in 1981.
Oscar the Grouch.
Yes, in the film The Great Muppet Caper, Miss Piggy throws Peter Ustinov out of a truck into a pile of rubbish.
5 out of 5.
But Peter Ustinov did win his first of 2 Oscars in 1960 for Spartacus.
My dad used to love Peter Ustinov as Hercule Poirot, by the way.
And a great raconteur as well.
Like you.
Bought at auction by Michael Jackson for $1.54 million.
Oscar the Grouch?
No, it was actually the Oscars. It was the actual Oscar for Best Film for Gone with the Wind. Although the original Oscar is in the Smithsonian. I think we've got 2 more to go. The suffering will soon be over. Held by Elton John.
Oscar the Grouch.
No, it's an Oscar. He won an Oscar statuette for his song in The Lion King. He was never in Sesame Street, but he was once in The Muppet Show. And provenance of name unclear, but most likely named after an employee's uncle.
The Oscars.
Yes. So there's some dispute. It's lost in time why they're called the Oscars. But the most likely explanation is there was a librarian at the Academy who said that the statuette looked like her uncle Oscar, whereas Oscar the Grouch was named after the grumpy proprietor of a New York restaurant called Oscar's Salt of the Sea.
Now, what do you think our awards will be called? Will they be called the Cheerfuls or the Chats?
I mean, I do like the Eddies.
Oh,
I know I'm writing myself out of history there.
Oh, that is
good. The Eddies are good, aren't they?
What are they an award for, though? Maybe that's what we should, like, give a hand over to our listeners.
Yeah, but there we go. There's another thing for you. chat@cheerfulpodcast.com. Right, I'll release you into your day.
Likewise.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.